Hello, welcome to the Brothers Geek Podcast. I am your host, Patrick Schmaltz, along with my two brothers, two awesome brothers, Andrew Schmaltz and Christopher Schmaltz.
One awesome.
Yeah, that's me.
One awesome, one not. Is that what you're saying?
One awesome, one.
I didn't say that. You didn't let me finish.
What was the other modifier?
I'm sorry to interrupt. Continue, host.
Please. Okay. So that's Christopher insulting Andrew.
Hey, the podcast
it was not an
start.
Insult.
This is Christopher saying Andrew is not awesome. That's what kind of show this is.
I am phenomenal.
If you weren't wondering, this is episode.
Phenomenal. Andrew, you are phenomenal.
Phenomenal. Cool. This is episode 6. We've done 5 of these. This is number 6. That's awesome. I feel good.
It's more than a handful.
It's more than a handful. We're going to keep doing this. We're
going to
keep doing this because we love this.
And number 2.
Yeah. We've moved on to the second hand.
Second hand. Of counting.
I like it.
Thumb or pinky?
Thumb.
Or index finger.
Totally thumb. I would do an index finger.
I would do it like this.
Thumb?
I can't see. I can't see what you're doing, Andrew.
I think I'm an index. I'm not a pinky. Nobody's a pinky.
Who's counting with their pinky for number 6?
Do it like that. 5 and then the thumb.
Move away from the camera, Andrew. You're coming in too close.
Index
we can't see
finger,
you. Know.
Index finger or thumb for 6.
There it is. He's doing the thumb. He's doing the thumb. Okay.
Thumb.
Well,
thumb,
that's...
I don't know. That's a good question.
This is a fun conversation. So this is a podcast
is
about geek stuff. We
geekery.
Talk about all geek culture and awesomeness. And let's start off with some news. There was some news announced today about the new Star Wars films. Some stuff that actually matters, opposed to Han Solo breaking his leg. That doesn't matter.
Harrison Ford breaking his leg.
Excuse me. He's not the character, bro.
Yeah.
Han Solo in the movie breaks his leg. Now it's written in the script because of him breaking his leg in real life. Now he's going to have a cast the whole time.
No. But they changed it to be his hip because he's so freaking old.
Low blow.
Chris
is punchy today. Jeez.
He's punchy most
days. Don't get on Chris's bad side.
Him all the time. He's punchy most days.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
It's okay. We love it. Give him a big hug.
Yeah.
See him on Friday.
Give me a hug.
So,
can we all accept the fact?
No.
Can we like embrace it? We're going to be all in the same locale on Friday.
That's right.
Awesome.
I'm super pumped about that.
I am super pumped. I'm super pumped about the destination, but I'm also super pumped about the journey because we're driving through Death Valley.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to chronicle that. I want to see Death Valley photos.
I'm taking tons of photos, and I will definitely chronicle it as we drive through it. I'm very excited about that experience.
So, cool.
Yeah.
Cool.
Anyway, getting back to Patrick's point, yes, there was an announcement made this week. J.J. Abrams, they have begun shooting, and he contributed to the script as well on episode 7. He will not continue his directing duties into episode 8. Episode 8, it was announced, will be written and directed by Rainn Johnson, who is the writer and director of Looper with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Did
it come out last year or the year before?
Which, in the opinion of most smart, really excellent reviewers of movies, loved it.
Nope.
People who didn't love it and who don't like it, you know, their opinions about movies, you know, you gotta think. You gotta question. They usually have weird facial. That's right, facial hair.
Very weird facial hair. Mm,
yes.
So he's talking about me, because I like Looper up until one point. Okay, it's a very good movie, but the time travel is flawed for one big reason, and the one big reason ruins the movie. It's the end reason. And so if you haven't seen the movie, I don't want to ruin it for you, but Basically,
the movie came out in 2012.
I need to see it again in order to
properly evaluate. Do you want me to tell you what's wrong with it that ruins the movie for people who haven't seen it?
No.
I will watch it again, and then we can discuss it.
Okay. We'll have an informed discussion about it.
Okay. Everybody who's listening to this podcast, go watch Looper, because next week we're going to ruin it for you, because there is one big flaw in that movie that ruins the entire point of the movie, if you think about it.
Hold on. Let's say 2 weeks.
All right, we'll give it 2 weeks.
We're all traveling and everything else. Who knows if we're going to have time to watch Looper.
2 weeks. 2 weeks from now, watch Looper, and we'll ruin the damn movie for you, okay?
Yeah.
Because there's something wrong with it. Anyways, I like that director for Brick, which is a movie that came out a couple years before that with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, one of his first movies, and he's super young in that. And I love that movie. So I'm okay with this. I just didn't... I wasn't a fan of Looper.
I'm excited about it.
Which is a very fun, interesting movie.
The question will be who's writing it.
He is writing it. He's writing and directing.
And I think that I have hope then.
Yeah. No,
you know, you put the Star Wars universe in the hand of somebody who's capable of writing a decent tale.
Yeah.
With detailed characters and fully realized story and things that you will care about. Those are the best Star Wars movies.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah. Yep. So, and he's definitely capable of doing that. You certainly care. The time travel issue that Patrick is talking about, setting that aside, you certainly care about the characters in that movie.
Definitely.
So, yes, you do.
Well written.
They're all
very thought out.
World building kind of stuff. He does in Looper is very complete.
And he doesn't have to build the world. He just has to fill.
No, I'm just saying he has
that. Star Wars.
So he has that attention to
world building.
He'll be good. He will fill the world even more, I think.
But how do we feel about three different directors taking the three different movies? Like, I don't know, like George...
I feel great. You know why I feel great? Because George Lucas isn't one of them.
Yes. Right. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, the original
That alone, Disney is not going to F this up. I mean, that's the way it goes. Mm. This is a great thing. Disney is not going to F it up.
So, George Lucas didn't write and direct all three of the original trilogy. Sure. He wrote and directed the first one, A New Hope.
He
contributed to the story, and Lawrence Kasdan wrote Empire, and it was directed by Irving Kirshner.
Irving Kirshner, yeah. Who is the third? Who is the third?
I don't know.
Return of the Jedi.
Was Richard Marquand was the director, but I don't remember who wrote
Lucas wrote it.
Lucas wrote all the story for all of them, but then he didn't write the script. And then when he had made billions of dollars, he decided, I'm just gonna write and direct all three of the new prequels. So I'm just gonna do that. That's gonna be my
ego
job.
Ran amok.
That was my Lucas impression.
That was pretty terrible.
Good. Thank you.
It was really terrible.
All right. So we feel good about that.
Let's also say this. There is a bit of news today.
Yeah.
Today is Joss Whedon's 50th birthday. Happy birthday, Joss Whedon.
Joss Whedon, happy birthday. I hope you're listening to the podcast.
Lucas and I IMDb'd
What is it? Return of the Jedi?
Kasdan and Lucas are on the screenplay.
Okay.
Okay. Cool.
And you know that it's light. There's no, yeah. I mean,
I hope Kasdan stays through all of them, because he's good.
I doubt he will, but that's okay.
Script writing, it's not very labeler intensive. You can do that from your house. You don't have to like work all the time on stuff. So I think they could get him for all three.
A lot of that Disney pressure, though.
Right.
I mean, let's not forget, this is a Disney enterprise now.
Yeah,
so.
Totally.
As a fact.
All right. Well, happy birthday, Joss Whedon. They were talking to him about directing one of them for a while, weren't they?
I think they always talk to Joss. Joss is now at the top of the A-list.
Well,
I don't know about that, but
I don't know if he's
near the top. Okay, so he's near the top.
He's got to get, like, you know, because he really only has
You know, we watched the Avengers the other day. He is the only person on the writing credit for Avengers. I mean, we all knew this. The people who were Whedon fans ahead of it knew this dude can write and craft like you cannot believe. But we watched Avengers, the girls and I watched Avengers, and he got to the end, and there's Whedon as the writer. It's like, there's not a single other name. And I'm like, dude, that guy is, he is so good. He's so good.
Yeah.
Well, there's little known, I mean, Joss Whedon, he wrote, or at least contributed to the screenplay of the original Toy Story movie. He did an uncredited rewrite on the first X-Men movie.
Mm.
He also did an uncredited rewrite on Speed, which is probably one of the best action films ever.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you dig into it a little bit, he's been involved in some really interesting, well-crafted, fun movies.
The guy's talented.
Yeah, he's got talent.
That's all right. Fact. Well, and
I wish
and,
he would have. I hope they give to him, and he does a Wonder Woman movie. I think he could do, but he's probably locked up with Marvel now.
He's locked up with two more Avengers movies.
Yeah, he'll wrap up the Avengers trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
That'll kind of end up being his magnum opus.
Yep. Speaking of Joss Whedon, last week, Andrew, you posed a question to the group about the best endings to shows, television show finale, and we decided to think about that for a week and come back with some good answers. And I have a few. I have a best and I have a worst list, and I also have a controversial.
Okay.
Then go.
I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer had a really good finale. I was very pleased with it. It summed it up. You know, they closed the Hellmouth. Like, Buffy no longer had to be the Slayer because there was, you know, a billion Slayers. I liked how it. You know, put a cap on it, and it was a dark season. I mean, they went super dark in the last season, and it was a lot of fun. And I think that's a good finale. I was pretty satisfied with that.
Yeah.
You were saying Angel was a good.
I love the series finale.
I love Angel.
The other Joss Whedon story set in the quote unquote Buffyverse.
Mm-hmm.
It lasted 5 seasons. It ended, I think, the season. I think it was the same.
Was it 5 seasons or 4 seasons?
It was 5 seasons. Angel kind of existed on its own for a couple seasons. There really wasn't a lot of intertwining of the two stories between Buffy and Angel, and then the last season, they did a seismic shift in the storytelling of Angel, and they completely kind of refocused it in a totally new way that I thought was great. And it really became about how do you avoid the world corrupting you and losing yourself, you know, all the influences around us, and staying true to yourself was kind of the overarching point. And I thought that the series finale definitely brought home the point of the entire series, which was really the fight really never ends for who you are, and the world's a cruel place, and if you can't, you're never ever going to be able to defeat evil in all of its forms, so that just means you can never ever give up.
Well, that's sort of like the last shot of the season is them. This is not a spoiler. I'm not giving anything away. They're standing in an alley and they're getting ready to fight like a big horde of people because they've
insurmountable odds. They have struck a huge blow for the side of good, but evil can never be fully defeated.
Exactly.
The Wolfram and the Heart, Senior Parker.
Such a good show.
Bringing down the hammer.
Like, even just thinking about it right now, I have chills. Like,
yeah, it's good.
Yeah, they're standing there and they know.
It's not the winner. It's not the winner in my mind, though. It's number two for me.
What's number one?
Yeah.
Number one is the series finale of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one we brought up. That's good.
I thought about it more and more, and there isn't a better
such,
finale.
It's so good.
Yeah. The storytelling's amazing.
The storytelling's amazing. The whole idea.
They get the whole notion of time right.
Yeah, it's
science fiction. It's wacky, but they get it right. They get the concept. It's coherent. You can follow it, but it also, on some weird level, makes sense. And then the relationships and the storytelling. It's a callback to the very beginning of the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just they do a great job of including all of the best things about that whole series and the relationships. It's so good, and the way it ends is so that gives me chills. The whole notion of I should have done this.
Yeah,
a long time ago.
Yeah, and the long pullout that they do
awesome.
Through,
yep,
like the through the window of the room that they're in. You get a long pull, and it reveals the entire ship. And then, it's amazing.
That's my number one.
Okay. So you brought up an interesting question that I've always had whenever I think about that part is so Jean-Luc is the one jumping into the future, and he can see where they all end up and see where their relationships have impacted, and none of them believe him, or none of them trust him enough, and he's got to convince them. They all just think he's a crazy old man.
Throughout the course of the episode, yeah.
Right. And so the idea of him knowing the future and then deciding to play poker with them and change the dynamic so that won't happen. It'll be different because they'll have a different relationship in the future. That to me is like the epitome of awesome. It's just like that moment of it's a subtle shift that you don't realize. It's like things are not going to end up how we've seen it because Jean-Luc has seen what's going to happen.
Yeah. He is He's not rigid. He learns.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he adapts to, and he expresses regret.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He expresses the idea that I need to be, I have seen what we become.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it is not what I want us to be now, and it's not what I want us to be in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so regardless of whether or not Q in the future does something to initiate or to cause something to happen that triggers sort of those events. He knows that you got to live in the now, you got to embrace the now, you got to be close to and embrace the people around you in that moment. And it's a great lesson and completion to that series that I just thought was terrific.
That's what makes really good science fiction, really makes good television, good storytelling, is like that extra level.
What's your controversial one?
Controversial. Sopranos.
That's
not really
on my
science.
List of fantastic finale.
Fantastic
but
finale.
people didn't know what it meant.
No, I know.
And I think that's the best kind of way to end it.
Love it.
That just goes black.
I can't understand the criticism of that episode.
There is no just we hit for all of the seasons that Sopranos was on. We watched this family and all of the different choices that they made and all the unexpected things, and we were just examining this life going on and Tony Soprano involved in all these different aspects of him and his crime life and his regular family. And there are no easy answers in Tony's life, just like there are no easy answers for that TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point. You can't life never has little time. Life never ends completely or the story never fully ends. You know, it always goes on.
So the screen going black is that Tony dying?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
See? I love that Andrew says no and Christopher says yes.
100% yes.
100%. I think that's him. So it's more ambiguous. It's not about, there is no end, and so it doesn't matter when we turn off the screen, Andrew, because he's not really dying. It's just sort of like life goes on kind of a thing. That's what you're saying.
Well, and it's the uncertainty of Tony's life in general, that right. type of life. You never know when you're going to live or die. Somebody's going to walk up sure. behind you in the park and blow your brains out.
Mm.
You know, you're going to be at dinner eating onion rings, and some Goomba in a windbreaker is going to step up and blast you in front of your kids.
Which yeah. he did. Tony's dead.
Tony's dead. Interesting. Okay.
No question he's dead.
All right.
That's the whole point of that. Go fade to black. It's
fade
not even
to black.
Fade to
he's dead.
Fade to black. It's a cut to black. Cut to black.
It's a cut.
That's
it's like,
why. He got shot in the head.
Yep.
It's over. The series is over because lights turned out for Tony.
Nope. Yep.
That's it. Done.
He looks up and he's dead.
Because the whole show is about Tony.
Yeah.
And his relationships with everyone around him, his world. It's yeah. all his world.
I don't know. I can't argue with that.
The series yeah. ends with him getting shot in the head.
I love
Done.
That. I love that. I think that's so
it's
interesting
so
that you
smart.
Have to that it's a question that you don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's so great.
Genius. I thought it was genius.
Oh, I thought it was genius.
But
also.
Like people freaked out about this. They wanted to know. They wanted
to
know.
The old joke is that people thought their cable had gone out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
HBO
yeah,
had
like,
gone
HBO
out.
What happened? My HBO
failed.
Cut off.
Exactly. Yeah. So I have a couple of worse.
Worse. Okay.
Worse are Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Terrible ending. And I don't know if you guys watched How I Met Your Mother, but I was very dissatisfied with the end of How I Met Your Mother. Looks like we froze up a little bit here. I'm going to mark down the time until it comes back. What the hell?
Aired when I was young. I probably was in high school. When
you guys cut out for a second. Are you guys still here?
Yes, he hears.
Okay, now I can hear yeah. you. You guys totally like froze up.
Okay.
The series finale of Seinfeld, I think, was what, high school when it aired?
Mm-hmm.
I was in high school, so 15 years ago, more than that. I just remember it not being funny.
It's not very funny. That's
yeah,
the problem.
No, I remember the show, and the beyond the fact that the plot may have been a little bit lame, and it kind of was like, it was a cheat to the viewers, or the viewers felt cheated because they just kind of ended on a limp note, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I remember Mom and I watching it, and Mom's comment was she felt dumb for having watched these people live their lives for these five or six seasons, because it turned all of the despicable, stupid crap that they'd done over the past few seasons, they were rehashing that, and it just wasn't funny. It just
yeah.
felt like, you know, these are totally self-involved, egocentric people that why did we tune in to watch this? Because it doesn't seem like they care about the viewers at all.
Made you feel bad that you were watching it.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, beyond the fact of that, that it just wasn't funny.
Yeah.
And there are episodes of Seinfeld that are uproariously funny.
Oh my God, Seinfeld is like the great, it's one of the greatest sitcoms ever.
Well, the episode that always comes to mind with Seinfeld, it for me, is the bet that they all make
the
to
bet.
See who can go the longest without, you know, self-gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And they never say the word once in the entire episode, but everybody knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And, you know, through the course of the episode, everyone kind of checks out and they all lose or whatever. And it's just insanely funny.
Yep.
How they pull it all off. That
yep.
episode in particular. I mean, it's one of the greatest episodes of TV ever.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah,
it still stands up.
The finale is definitely a letdown.
Yeah. Agreed.
Did you hear me say How I Met Your Mother?
Yes.
Yeah. Nah.
Did you guys watch
I don't
that?
Want to talk about it. I never
no,
watched it.
I watched it vicariously through Susan and the girls. And so I knew how it ends, and I had been reading about it. The TV critics that I follow and read were writing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew about it, but I hadn't been a regular watcher of the show. So
here,
I,
yeah,
I mean,
my,
no,
My big gripe with it is like we spend the entire last season talking about and leading up to Barney and Robin's marriage and what their love means, and the last episode they basically throw that out the window and they just say this has always been about Robin and Ted, not about the mother. And it's sort of like it's this whole build up to this one thing, and it's like no, all this time the love of Ted's life has been Robin. And it's like, what the hell is that crap? No, it's Robin is wrong for Ted. That's what we've learned for the past like 7 seasons. So
isn't that kind of the point of at least multiple episodes, if not entire seasons of the show, is that they're not right for each other?
They're not right, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, because they were together for like 2 or 3 seasons at the beginning of the series.
Yeah.
And then they broke up, and then they got back together for a little bit, and then Ted, and then Robin and Barney were together for like 2 or 3 seasons, and then he decided to get married.
Yep.
So Ted has to get over her for like 2 or 3 seasons of this TV show.
Right.
And then he realizes at the end that he loves her after the mother has died and everything else.
Yep. That's the payoff. That's horrible.
Yeah. Dissatisfying.
Very dissatisfying. So I think it's an interesting idea, and I like the idea. I think TV show finales, it's a tough thing to do because people have expectations about what they want for the finale and what they expect. And when you don't meet those expectations, it's tough. But, it got me thinking a lot. So I like the question, Andrew. So thank you for posing it.
Yeah.
Hopefully we can come up with...
Did you have a worst finale? A finale that you just didn't like?
No, I don't have a worst. I have a... I just have a list of sort of dissatisfied finales.
Oh, okay.
Such as, I was dissatisfied with the couple of Sci-Fi Channel series finales, Atlantis, Stargate Atlantis. On the list of dissatisfied but actually very happy, because I thought they did as good as they could have done with the hand they were dealt, was the Stargate Universe finale.
Yes.
Show that is.
I love that show.
Such an interesting, and I mean, Stargate fans for me had kind of taken on the idea of like the most obsessive kind of Trekkie fans, and how kind of I was so dismissive of those guys because they all seemed like they were just sweaty.
Dude, I was one of them. I watched that show from day one on Showtime.
I know, but I mean, and how obsessive they would get and how kind of lame they were about it. But I embraced Stargate Universe from the jump, and I thought it was a very original take. I tried to watch. I love that show. All the different characters and how they got pulled into it.
Humor and and it had it was it's great.
It's a much better show. I feel like it's a better it's more in like easy to get into show versus Stargate SG-1, which is very like niche. You know, it's very like you have to be this kind of geek.
The concept is pretty dense.
Yes. Yes. And Stargate Universe
and it went on for so long.
Okay. Did you have a best or worst? Do you have a worst, Andrew?
In terms of least satisfying finales for me, you touched on Seinfeld. And I mean, I don't know. I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna, but I always try to find things about series finales that I really like. I was thinking about it. I mean, there were parts of the Lost finale that I really liked. I mean, sure, there were a ton of unanswered questions, but on the whole, I was happy with it. The Battlestar finale, I liked it. There was a ton of unanswered questions and stuff that I didn't really understand and maybe didn't make sense in general.
but on the whole, I kind of liked it. Ronald D. Moore towards the end of it got a little maybe got a little preachy. But yeah, no, I was trying to rack my brain, but there's only been a couple shows that I was so invested in that, I mean, they were just event television where I was sad that they were ending rather than kind of anticipating how they were going to try to wrap it up,
mm-hmm.
Excited anticipation. I mean, yeah. So, I mean, it's just not honestly, I wish, it's kind of cheating the question, but I wish I couldn't think of any finale that I found wholly unsatisfying.
You know what finale really sucked on a show that I watched religiously is The X-Files.
Oh.
I gave up on The X-Files in like season 4.
Dude, as soon
I was diehard and we watched every season and then it was sucky.
Yeah.
And those last few seasons were terrible.
I stopped watching when Mulder left. Yeah.
Duchovny comes back and it's just totally, it's really, it was bumming me out.
Well, you bring up a good point. The whole idea of like shows continuing their life in film form, like Firefly and Serenity, you know, one of the greatest like science fiction shows of cult classic shows of our generation, and it has the finale because of a film.
You know, and this, I have to bring this up because it's such piss, so pisses me off.
Yeah,
because Sci-Fi Channel and the show Defiance is such a freaking ripoff.
Yep.
I mean, they play up that whole Western themed bullshit. Mm-hmm. It drives me crazy that show is on TV and Firefly is not.
Yep.
I mean, I watched Defiance, but it is a pale imitation.
So not as good.
But it's hitting all the same freaking notes. It's like you are shameless in your attempt to capture all of the cool tone and ideas of Firefly. Really, it just makes me angry every time there is like a moment of the twang of a guitar or something. The soundtrack evokes Firefly in some way.
Yeah,
and it just makes me rage against
them. Oh, that's so great. Pissed.
Not at Defiance per se, but at the idea that Firefly isn't on TV.
Totally.
That's a show that should be pushing 200 episodes.
Oh, yeah.
It's really a tragedy.
Very much so. Anyways, let's move on to scene.
Yeah.
We have a couple things that we've both seen, all seen, I think, this week. Andrew and I, we watched True Blood, the season... What is it, season 7?
Season 7 premiere.
I also watched the premiere.
You also watched it? Okay. And it's the last season?
It's thankfully limping towards the finale.
Jesus. Yeah.
It's hate watching at this point.
This is like...
I will watch every episode because I just want to see it end.
Right.
Yeah.
And I want to, but it's like, it's difficult.
It's not good. It used to, like, season 1 and 2, I remember thinking, this is one of the best shows I've ever seen.
They had fun. They were having fun.
Yeah.
It was like embracing the whole world and really enjoying it and playing up all the wacky and goofy and campy and sexy stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's just dreary slog to the finish. It's like, geez.
Yeah.
Put us all out of our misery, and Sookie too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awful. I wasn't impressed with it at all. I'm going to definitely keep watching, but it's pretty not good.
We'll watch. We can talk about how bad it is.
Well,
as we move forward.
I was watching it, and I was half paying attention in the beginning part. Did they actually show Tara get killed?
No.
So...
It's a lie.
It's a lie. She's alive. They show everybody get killed.
I feel like it's Bush League psychout stuff.
It is Bush League.
Totally Bush League. It is a that the her mother is an unreliable witness.
Yeah.
Yes.
100%. And so it's so weak. It's so terrible.
So weak, yeah. That they're trying to make us believe that
exactly
that so she's dead.
No way she's dead. No way. They would have shown her exploding.
Yeah.
Yeah, they should have. I watched True Blood from the jump, and I read Charlene Harris's books, and they are pure brain candy, pure kind of romance novel.
Romance. Drivel. Yeah.
They have a little bit of cleverness going on. They're kind of above the bodice ripper, quote unquote, romance novels. Because her writing's a little bit clever, and it's an original concept.
Sure.
You know, a modern America set with these supernatural.
It's not original.
It's an original take.
It's not original. Stupid.
Oh, okay. Anyways, Andrew. Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, I have the same. Thinking back on it and how much fun and kind of insanely wild the first few seasons were. I mean, that's just hard to sustain.
Yeah.
And obviously, I'm going to watch the last few episodes to see how it all resolves. The book series itself is wrapped up as well, and the TV series completely diverged from the books like 5 or 6 books ago.
Yeah.
There's very little that's still kind of in common with the books. So.
Yeah, Ball wants to tell his own story.
I'm fine with that. But Alan Ball's not even involved in the show anymore.
Yeah.
Being the head, there's a new head writer, new showrunner, everything. So we'll see where it goes. I mean, I have trouble with kind of the idea that they're posing for this season in terms of these sick vampires being on the rampage. How are they going to make that interesting?
Dumb. Yeah. Makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of
Let's not waste any more too much time already talking about.
Okay. Okay. What else have we watched?
Penny Dreadful continues to kick ass.
So
that show is freaking ridiculous.
The last episode went in a new direction.
Yes. The episode with what's her name?
Yeah.
And Mina is
so.
I gotta watch the show.
So good. The first couple episodes, you have no idea, where this is gonna go, and they just set up this universe, and they really focused on, Ava Green's character, and it's sort of like, whoa, okay, this is
what is she? What is she? Who? What is she tapped into?
Right. There is some crazy shit that's happening with her.
The reveal of what she is tapped into is so dark, dude.
So dark.
And it's all the previews for the final two episodes are setting it up to be like,
Is it 8 or 9?
I think there's two more.
I haven't watched any of it.
We're not giving anything away.
We're not giving anything away, man. But it is so good.
Dude.
Anyway, I'm watching that, and that is as satisfying a series as I've seen in a while.
It makes you want more. You watch just all they give you answers, and you want more. That's the right kind of tone. It's like, holy crap, what? And then it ends.
You know they're setting up. You know what they're teeing up, though, dude. You know who the bride of the demon is going to be. You know who I'm talking about, Patrick?
I think I do. The bride.
The bride. You know who the bride's going to be? Is the one guy is going to take his lover?
Yeah.
Who is sick? The doctor. You know that's going to happen, dude. Yeah.
Yes! No!
Yes!
Billy Piper? No.
Yes, that's exactly what's going to
happen. Holy crap. That would be insane.
That's my prediction right now.
That's a good prediction. Yeah. Do you think they'll resolve that in the next episode?
Nope.
I mean...
Nope.
Jesus.
Nope.
This show is crazy.
They'll tee it up in the finale, but they will absolutely not resolve it.
Very interesting.
Susan and I were talking about that. That's my prediction.
That's a good prediction. I like that.
Yeah.
That's a good
idea.
Which
would cause, my God, the tension that would cause
in
that crew.
They already have so much tension. Jesus. Everybody, like...
Andrew, you gotta watch this. Andrew.
Everybody doesn't trust each other. Everybody's at each other's throats. It's insane.
And it's dark. So dark.
So dark. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So, what I've... The only other thing that I will mention that I've seen is I restarted Battlestar, and I'm watching those...
Yeah.
That series.
How far are you into that?
I'm on episode 4. The episode with the sabotage of the water tanks.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
And that's real
and
good.
And the reveal that she is a sort of a controlled or programmed...
She's a sleeper.
She's a sleeper. Yeah.
And the tension, that's just a great sort of... It's one of the bedrock episodes of the entire series, the notion that Cylons are pre-programmed or could be... unknowingly they are Cylons, and then there's could be a switch that is thrown that makes them do things that either they don't remember or then they do remember, and but they think of themselves as human. It's just a great, I mean, it is a seminal episode for the entire series. So
yeah,
well,
it's,
and
so entertaining, so good.
And her resolution is season one is the craziest shit ever.
Oh yes.
Oh yeah.
I remember watching that the first time, and we were all like, "What?
Yeah,
I not believe it."
Such good television. Such good television.
Anyway, I'm very psyched to be working my way through that. I'm going to work my way through that whole series. So.
All right, good. Yeah. Good. Andrew, what else have you watched?
We talked about True Blood. The only thing, the new series that I kind of picked up, I watched the first episode of, and I made it through the whole episode because it was limited commercial interruptions, and that's how they build it. Was Dominion on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Yeah.
Okay. It is a sequel to the little remembered and much maligned movie called Legion.
Maligned?
Yeah, that movie's bad.
It's revered, dude. I'll never forget that scene of the old lady in the cafe.
That's the scene. Oh, I was gonna bring. That's the only scene anybody
that's
even remembers.
That's the only memorable scene where she like crawls up on the ceiling
and people are like flies all around her with a shotgun. Yeah. No.
So this show is based on that idea of it's like the world is coming to an end and there's like demons and angels all over the place.
Fighting. Humans are in the crossfire.
Angels have attacked the people of the earth.
Yes. Okay.
Well, the majority of them have. There's different levels of angels. That show sets up a mythology, and then
there's a kid that the demons want.
There's no demons,
want.
Dude. They're all angels. There are
no
less
dude.
Angels.
There are demons in the movie.
There's demons
there are
in the movie.
No demons in the show. There are lesser angels that have to possess human beings.
There are demons in the movie, so that's a divergence.
Well,
in the show.
Like
lesser,
the devil is an angel, so you know
it's a fallen angel.
Fallen angel. Exactly. So
we've all seen Supernatural. We know the mythology on that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Totally. Yeah.
So I watched that show and it is absurd.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say hard to watch, but filled with.
I recorded it. I'm gonna give it a try.
Filled with attractive people and doing important things, I guess, to the world of the show. Giles of the actor who played Giles from Buffy the Vampire Slayer and in the Whedonverse, Anthony Stewart Head, has a major role in the series. He plays kind of a duplicitous political leader in this city, one of the last remaining cities in North America called Vega.
He did a job after Merlin.
So the show starts off like with shit going down, like it's already gone down.
It's like sometimes set after the events.
It's a generation after the initial angel invasion that decimated most of the human race. The angels declared war. The angels led by Gabriel declared war on the human race.
Okay. Don't even bring logic to the premise, dude.
Zero.
Well, Patrick, I'm just trying to like set up the universe.
If you try to think through it, it's going to be like. This makes no sense.
Well, I've already like got like three questions. Like, why do the angels care? Like, who?
The angels blame the human race for God disappearing.
That's good. That sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sure. Makes no sense. Why did God disappear?
Nobody knows.
So it's a good idea to blame humans for something that they don't have the answer to. Cool.
Yeah. That makes
sense. Makes perfect sense.
Maybe the angels are led by one of the archangels named the bad angels.
Okay.
Are led by an archangel named Gabriel. Uh-huh. And hopefully we'll get into more of Gabriel's motivation.
This shit has been done on Supernatural.
The humans able to hurt the angels?
The angels are not all powerful. They are super beings, but they live in a world that
This was the question I had, Patrick. You're thinking along the exact same lines. How is it that humans aren't wiped out?
Because we outnumber them, and we had technology and weapons are effective.
Why, if we can hurt the angels, can't we just nuke the shit out of them?
It doesn't matter that I'm outnumbered by the ants.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, the ants lose.
Yeah, but the ants don't have Apache helicopters, you know?
They have pinchers with poison. What?
Yeah.
So what?
I think it's more like you attacking like a herd of cats. Like, yeah, if all the cats are pissed at you, like you're gonna have some problems because they can hurt you because they have claws. And
that's the analogy: is human to cat,
human to cat,
so angel to human.
Yeah, sure. Not ants.
Than human to ant.
Well, and you guys are forgetting a key point. We have an angel on our side, the good guys.
Oh.
Michael fights for the human race.
Yeah, but he can't fight.
Who plays Michael? Is it an actor we know? Because it was Paul Bettany, right?
Paul Bettany played Michael in the movie.
Right. Okay.
It is not Paul Bettany.
Well, yeah, I hope so. Hope the hell he's not on this show.
He's doing movies.
Yeah. He's on being a badass somewhere.
He's the voice of Jarvis.
Yeah. He hasn't done anything really since that, right? I mean, last movie I thought about him was like Wimbledon or something.
Dude, he was
a priest.
He's Stephen Maturin from Master and Commander.
He was great.
He was awesome in that.
But totally miscast.
Oh yeah.
Why do you say that?
Totally miscast.
Christopher is a Master and Commander snob. Everyone,
yep,
just so you know,
I am.
I read all the Patrick O'Brien.
Stephen Maturin is from Catalonia. He is a dark-skinned Spanish gentleman.
Oh, he's not an Irishman.
Moved to Ireland, short, like lizard kind of eyes. He's described as he's not Paul Bettany in any way.
But isn't he supposed to be like a spy guy?
Yes.
He's like a English intelligence.
He's a naturalist. English intelligence.
He's embracing the modernity.
He's from Catalonia. But he's also from Ireland. Yeah, he's a complex character who is absolutely not tall.
Interesting.
And British.
If those were the most boring books ever created, I would give them a shot. So
the movie is
they are not they are far from boring, dude.
That movie is awesome.
The Master Commander movie starring Russell Crowe is easily in my top 10.
I love that movie. I will give you that.
It's a mashup of a couple of those books.
Yeah.
And that series is phenomenal. Phenomenal.
The movie is amazing.
All right. Anything else for scene, gentlemen?
Nope. We kind of covered everything I watched.
Yeah. Red.
Oh, I have to say, I did watch the premiere of The Last Ship. Did you hear about that?
Yeah.
It actually started?
I had
TNT.
No intention. This was totally by happenstance. Yesterday, I was on TNT for some reason.
Yeah.
Right at nine. Right when it was starting. Honestly, I did not have any intention of watching it. I don't know if I'm going to watch further episodes. But anyway,
this is the Michael Bay joint.
Yes, I stayed on it to watch, to understand what the premise is, and to see whether or not it was worthy to watch.
Isn't there a woman in the show who has been... You like that show that's on Cinemax, the two
Strike
special
Back guys. Yes, she was on Strike Back. She actually got killed in that show.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But, well, she was on SG-1 also, wasn't she?
She's fantastic in that show.
She was in season 2, SG-1. Or not SG-1, SGU. Stargate Universe. She played one of the Goa'uld, or not the Goa'uld.
SG-1 is the main show. SGU is
SGU.
The...
Yeah. She was one of the bad girls. She was like one of the evil people.
Yeah,
who were
she's
on the
good,
ship.
And she's the main scientist.
Yeah.
In the last ship.
So was any good?
It was actually shockingly entertaining. I watched the entire. The entire pilot.
So, I will have to give this a shot.
Yeah, it's very straightforward, rampant virus, end of the world kind of stuff. But
it just seemed the show seemed very expensive to me because, like, how can they shoot on this show?
Yeah.
Like,
there
like
get ton of shots of battleship and lots of fights and. I mean, clearly with military involvement. And,
right.
Yeah, it's got to be an expensive show.
Because this battleship that they're on is like billions of dollars. Like, they don't just rent one of those.
I was having that same thought because it looks like, I mean, they've probably dressed it up to look like a modern one.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure that there are decommissioned battleships that you could lease.
Well, and Michael Bay has... Yeah. A very cozy relationship with the U.S. military.
Yeah, yeah he does.
But he gets carte blanche.
Well, my guess is that it puts a lot of people to work.
Yeah.
They are able to lease a decommissioned battleship that they can dress up to look. Nobody is going to really, other than the Tom Clancy snobs, are really going to know the details of whether or not this battleship is truly a modern one.
Right.
Yeah.
And they can make it look cool. And, sure. You know, all the interior shots can be on a set, and they just have to do just a ton of exterior sort of Michael Bay crap.
Yeah.
And then, you know, try to make it compelling. And the first – I have to say, the first episode wasn't bad.
Who directed the first episode? Was it directed by Michael Bay?
I don't remember. I wasn't paying any
attention. I'm curious. I'm going to look at the credits and see if he directed the first one, because if he's producing it, like – why not, you know?
He might have.
Are you guys going to go see Transformers next week?
Hell, yes. I, you know, Adria and I are going on Thursday night. I like Wahlberg, and the Dinobots have me sold, so.
It works, because I hated the first three. They're not good.
Oh, come on, the first one's fun.
You can't hate the first three.
They're brilliant.
The first one is robot ninjistics, dude.
They are all awful. You have fooled yourself into thinking that it's good. They are Michael Bay crap.
The
first Transformer movie is shocking, and I can't believe they got those robots to do that. I mean, it is amazing.
Yeah.
The next ones are shit.
Yes.
The first one.
And I don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong. I am excited to see Age of Extinction.
Hold on.
You have no idea the excitement level
of my girlfriend for this movie. She is chomping at the bit to see this movie. We are going at 9 o'clock on Thursday.
Well, that's because Marky Mark and the Funky Bunch is in it. So,
she's a Transformers fan.
Really?
She has the original series on DVD.
Marky Mark.
He'd be great in
this
movie.
Is your girlfriend?
This is my girlfriend.
Dude, that's a keeper right there.
It's a miracle.
It's a miracle. You're just lucky that she keeps talking to you, dude.
No question about it.
I think we all can agree on that.
Okay, good. Moving on to Red.
Yeah.
Moving on. Christopher, what do you got to read?
I continue to read Codex Alera.
Codex Alera.
Yes.
Cool.
Which is very good so far.
It's good so far. This is like the first book of only
six book series.
But it's only the first one that's been published, right?
Okay.
They're all out.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, no, it's all out. The whole series is written, done.
All right.
Yeah, so I'm going to read the whole series. It's entertaining. It's very good.
That's good.
I frankly did not read any comics this week.
Oh, well, that's fine.
Anything else I read? No, that's pretty much it. That's it.
That's fine. Yeah, yeah. Andrew?
I picked up Stormfront, and I'm about 100 pages into Stormfront of the Dresden Files, and I'm finding it very entertaining. The part of the book that I am at, and Christopher, you know, will recognize this, of course, we have just been introduced to Bob. Dresden
Bob the Skull
has a spirit that inhabits a skull that is he provides him with magical information. But he has a very kind of mischievous and a dirty personality.
Yes.
So
he is like a Wizarding World's Google.
Yes, exactly.
With the idea that he has been owned by evil wizards in the past.
Oh. Yeah.
And so he has access to information that it can be very bad. So
the first 100 pages, they've spent a lot of time.
He's a great character.
He is. And I put that book down and picked. I didn't realize that it had come out, but when I saw it at the bookstore, I had to pick it up. I am reading The Silkworm, which is written by. It is book two in the Cromoran Strike Detective Series novels, written by Robert Galbraith.
What are these?
This is the pen name for J.K. Rowling.
Oh.
J.K. Rowling of Harry Potter, superstardom and super wealth.
Yeah.
She published this detective novel under the pen name of Robert Galbraith, and I don't know if it was later leaked, quote-unquote leaked, or somehow it became common knowledge that she was writing under this pen name.
Yeah, it was known.
Yeah, but I mean, so this is the second book in the series. I enjoyed the first book very much. It was kind of a very straightforward detective story set in modern London with an interesting main character, Cromoran Strike. He is a... and I love kind of... She's... J.K. Rowling is a very, very skillful writer, and she creates the world of modern London. From what I can glean, it seems very realistic. Strike has some interesting characteristics that I like. He is an Arsenal Gunners fan, so that kind of speaks to me, because I am also an Arsenal Gunners fan now. So that's fun. I am enjoying the book very much. I will continue to read it, and I hope she publishes more.
There's no supernatural elements to this book?
Zero.
It's just a detective story.
It's a straightforward crime noir kind of detective story.
Is he a police officer?
He is a private detective. His story is that he served as a military police special investigator in the British Royal Army.
I see.
And he was wounded in combat, and he is retired from the British Royal Army, and he opened his own detective agency. And the second book, he has gained some fame for solving the murder that is detailed in the first book. He's penniless, and he has no clients in the first book, and he gets brought in to investigate this murder by a family member of this person who's murdered, and he solves the murder in kind of a spectacular way. So his business prospects are very much on the uptick in the second book. She's establishing the theme that Strike is very dissatisfied with his current client base, because really he's just investigating angry divorcees who really want to get dirt on their, you know, wives and husbands, and he finds it all very pedestrian. So he's the main mystery of this book appears to be the disappearance of kind of the second-rate novelist that Strike, he kind of takes the mystery on despite his good judgment, because it doesn't seem like anybody can really pay him to investigate this, but it's actually kind of an intriguing mystery.
How many books are there?
It's just the second book.
There's only two books?
So far, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
But right. I'm enjoying
is she continuing to do this?
She's got more money than God, so
she's just writing whatever she wants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. She writes very well.
Anything else you got, Andrew?
I'm caught up with Batman Eternal, but you know, this past week I've been into Stormfront and I've been into the Silkworm. So. Mm.
Okay. I'm listening to the Dresden books.
Yeah,
and I'm on book 3 currently.
Sweet, so. Nice. Yeah. So I've been listening to a book, which is Feast for Crows after Game of Thrones.
Song of Ice and Fire's fourth.
What's
fourth
that?
The fourth volume of A Song of Ice and Fire.
Yes. After the Game of Thrones finale, I wanted to know more, and I realized that my friend had given me the book on tape. So I was like, yeah, let's listen to that. So I've been listening to that in my car, and I'm about 5 hours in of 30 hours of listening. Yes. So just think about that.
Yeah.
It's
a very long book.
Yeah.
They're all very long.
It's super long. Holy crap. So I'm enjoying that so far. It's kind of nice to like have somebody read a book to you while you're driving around. So that's fun. Mm-hmm. I've also read, I went to Powell's today, and I read 2 volumes of Hawkeye by Matt Fraction.
Yeah.
This is a really pretty, I mean, it's not great, but it's a lot of fun, you know?
Yes.
The writing is interesting, and the art is simple and enjoyable to look at, comfortable to look at. It's just a nice book to read, and I don't know
Hawkeye
if it's worth...
Hawkeye 1 and 2?
Yeah, the first one's is like, My Life is a Weapon, and the second one is...
These are collected volumes?
These are collected volumes. Yeah, they're like, it's only like 11 issues is the first 2 volumes, but it's...
They're on issue, they're in the 20s now, I think, for that storyline.
Might have to download that on my tablet.
It's pretty interesting.
It's a satisfying book. I have the first 12 or 13 issues and it's fun. I like it.
What I like about it that is kind of the main focus is Hawkeye more is like a dude that sometimes does superhero stuff. Versus, like, he's in the suit the whole time. He's, like, investigating supervillains. Like, a lot of the stuff he deals with is, like, apartment building problems, or, like, he stumbles onto somebody needing help.
That's,
and he doesn't.
See, that's too modernist for my taste.
Yeah. It's pretty.
Come on. Read comic books for kick ass superheroes.
No, he kicks ass. Like,
all right, but come on.
It's a lot of fun.
It's modernist.
The wit of Fraction's writing.
The wit is good.
It's a lot of wit. It's a lot of
I've looked at it. I haven't bought it, but I think I'll download it for upcoming trip. I'll probably get it.
Here's something about it too that's interesting that I think each issue is kind of like its own contained thing. Like he has to deal with something in each issue versus like this overarching story.
Yeah.
So it's good that way, and it keeps your attention going, and it's fun for like that little bit. But there's this overarching story happening now that's like continuing. So it's good. I'll keep reading it. I like it.
It's a nice diversion.
It's a nice diversion. Yeah. Played. Let's go on to Played. I definitely played stuff this week. What do you got, Christopher?
I got my witch doctor to 70 in Diablo.
Nice.
So I have
set up fireworks for you, and
I have every class except for barbarian up to 70. All softcore. None of these are hardcore. All softcore.
Aren't like epiced out or anything.
Well, my wizard is pretty well geared out, but. Yeah, I got the witch doctor up to 70, so I was happy about that.
All right.
So I'll work on the barbarian slowly, get her up to 70 as well, because she's at 65.
Jeez, that's so much. That's so much playing.
Yeah, I've played that game a lot. I started a Civ 5 game, which I got back to into Civ 5, and so that's ongoing. I'm playing Civ 5, and then just a ton more Mario Kart 8.
Nice.
That game is a blast. I'm loving that game.
Cool.
The girls and I are playing that just a ton. And we've unlocked a ton of stuff, and I've raced online. I've got my rating up. I raced single player online worldwide, so I was racing against folks from Japan and South America and some other places in Europe, and it was a good time.
Did you win?
I won my first race.
Nice.
And then I finished in the top five all the rest of my races, so my ranking... You have a rating. You start with 1,000 points, rating points, and then depending on how you finish is whether you gain points or lose points, and I think I'm at like 1,100 points right now, so I've moved my rating up because I've never finished lower than fifth. So
that's good.
Yeah, good time.
Oh, that's cool. I like that there's an online element to it.
Yeah, it's very fun.
Question about the Wii U. Are they all touchscreen controllers, or is there like other...
No. The gamepad. You can use that as a game controller.
Mm-hmm.
But I use, you know, for Mario Kart 8, I use the regular Wii... I mean, the controller, the motion controller that comes with the game in a steering wheel.
Oh.
So most of the games are controlled with those motion controllers, but you can play with the game gamepad. The girls like to do that. They like to, but you can play the game on the gamepad.
That's
like
cool.
They look at the small screen. They don't even look up at my nice big HD TV. I look over at Kristen and she's driving, looking at the small screen in front of her.
That's so cool.
But you need the actual Wii deck to make it all work.
Wii U deck.
Yeah, the Wii U thing. Yeah.
You need the Wii U, the gamepad, and then you need the actual Wii deck.
Yes.
Okay.
They have to be turned on, yes.
Okay. So they have to be linked. Okay.
Okay, well, I played a couple of games this week, but they were like older games. I've still been playing Mass Effect 3 with my buddies online, where we do... Okay. It's like waves of enemies, and you like fight, and you level up, and you like gain...
Firefight?
Firefight. Yeah. Firefight. You have waves of enemies, and you just gotta survive.
I'm sorry, I'll just interrupt you for one second. I had never completed Halo Reach. So I had some corporate money because I got some award at work.
Office space money.
Pretty much. So I bought myself Halo Reach, and I have a copy coming in the mail, so I will play that as soon as I get it.
You never played Halo Reach?
No, I played it. I just never completed it because my Xbox left.
Oh,
Xbox went to Oregon.
We used to own an Xbox together. We're brothers.
We are. but anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Patrick. That brought that up.
That's cool. Halo Reach is good. That's a fun game. Speaking of Halo, me and my buddies decided to do like throwback this week and do Halo 3.
I saw you online playing that.
So this has like such nostalgia for me and my buddies, because we used to get together and like do four-man just Xbox Live and play against, you know, we get a team of four and we go against four randoms and just
smoke fools.
We would smoke fools because two of my buddies are really good.
Yeah.
And every once in a while I would get like a good game in and just wreck face. But it's awesome when you're playing with people who talk to each other and understand the team's strengths, and when you go up against four dudes who don't know each other, who all suck,
they are invariably going to lose.
Yes, exactly. And we would always destroy, and it was so much fun. That's cool. So we did a little of that. We went up against each other, and we downloaded map packs and stuff, and God, it was fun. It took me back, and we were laughing every time, like, one of us stuck each other, or or like we kill each other with a sword. You know, we would just laugh. It was just hilarious because it was
Whenever we would play against one another, dude, those are the best memories of that game, is playing against one another and just laughing.
And Halo 3,
epic kills.
Halo 3 was the one. Halo 3 was so good. So
the online component of Halo 3 was awesome.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. We're talking about doing some more, so we'll probably do it again. But Mass Effect 3 has so much, like, online play. I mean, it's kind of repetitive that we're just doing these, like, missions over and over and over. But, like, there's a lot of, like, you earn money and you can buy packs that unlock new characters and new guns and stuff. And I have, like, tons of characters, and you can level them all up. There's literally like 100 characters that you can unlock. It's so nuts.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so there's like ones that I still want that you have to unlock, and it's random, so you could get them or not. So we keep playing, and it's a lot of fun. So we've been playing that a lot. And yeah, I've been having fun with that. I do have Dark Souls 2 in the mail from Gamefly.
Oh,
so
wow.
I'm going to play that and hate my life.
Yes.
Because it's the hardest freaking game.
Yes. I played the first one. I didn't beat it. But
you didn't beat it?
Fuck.
How far into it did you get?
What is that place called?
That game is epically brutal.
Epically brutal. I got, I think, time-wise, I got about halfway in.
Jeez.
But I played it a lot, and it wasn't it wasn't fun. Like,
but for those of us, I mean, I know just a little bit about
the whole concept of that. Games like that just boggle my mind.
It's just, here's what it is.
They don't give you any information on how to play the
game,
right?
Nope. They don't tell you what to do, where to go. They don't tell you why you're supposed to be anywhere. You're just supposed to figure it out. And it is.
And that's fun?
It's brutal. It's.
And you die.
Okay. You just die. You just die. Like, what cracked me up, because I knew going in Dark Souls 1 that I was going to hate it, or that you're going to die. Like, it's going to be brutal. I died like 5 times in the starting zone. Like the first 20 minutes of playing the game, I'm dead 5 times.
Wow.
And you got to start over. Like, there's, it sends you back to a save point, and so, like, a checkpoint, there's this whole checkpoint system in this game that is, like, unwielding and just, like, smashes
like
you into the ground.
Regular autosave, you know, progress.
Yeah. It's not like
it's
you
like
jump
you
back
die.
To 30 seconds ago. No, you jump. if you don't save, if you don't do that thing, you could jump back, like, a half an hour.
Wow.
Like,
that's nuts.
That would just, no way. No
how is this
way.
Fun?
Because,
how is this fun?
Okay,
people just embrace the challenge.
What it is it's just a hardcore challenge, because most games are just so easy that people just blaze through them, and this game offers up only the elite can do it, and people love that idea. Is like, I'm not going to give up. You're not going to, and think about, like, the
gamer.
I'm an elite gamer, and I'm not going to let you beat me, kind of a thing. And that's the draw to these games.
I'm going
to
put the time in and figure this game out.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And people do it. People love being punished. It's so ridiculous.
Yeah. Sounds like self-flagellation, man.
Yeah, right?
A little bit of that for sure.
A little bit. Yeah. So I'll probably talk about that next week.
When we're all together.
Next week.
When we record this in the same room.
So, World Cup talk? Do we want to talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Briefly.
It's a little raw for Christopher and I. I'm sure for the three of us, but especially for Christopher and I. He and I were in the same room yesterday during the USA match.
Yeah, let's just talk about that USA match, because that was a little brutal.
That finish was
It felt like a loss. Christopher said it. It felt like a loss. It felt like a loss.
Well, it's just because we had fought so hard to get that second goal.
Yeah. We're definitely the better squad. Just a terrible outcome. Now, objectively, it's a good outcome. It's a draw against Portugal. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, man, we had that freaking thing won.
We were
in round of 16.
Yep.
And the final play of the match.
Yep.
So it's just all of that just combined.
Yep. Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking.
Heartbreaking, yeah.
Objectively, you know, it's a draw. We got a point. It's good. We control our destiny, really.
Yeah.
But that's awesome. But we should have been talking today about being in the round of 16. And
we really should have.
Yeah. I would love that, because I'm so happy with how America has showed up. And I love that there's so much interest in it.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get like more money and we get more people watching it and we get more people wanting us to do better. And that just improves our squad.
Either of you heard how the ratings were on NBCSN?
No.
For Premier League?
I would like to know.
I never investigated it. I mean, it's coming back.
We need to investigate that, because I'm hoping that they did well on that.
Yeah.
And so they will continue to have lots of coverage.
I agree.
And continue that, because I bet you they did well.
They had to have been. They had to have done well.
Yeah, it's just like soccer. Soccer is such a secondary like idea in the United States. So I hope that, you know, us doing well is, you know,
We were looked the better squad for sure.
Yeah,
on Sunday.
Felt like it.
So I think we'll play well against Germany.
I hope. I'm worried Germany's going to crush us in the ground.
That is a problem.
It is a real possibility. They're that good.
I think we're playing well enough that we can give them a good match.
But
get
a draw
out of it.
I hope we just don't have a hangover.
Do you see what I was talking about though with the idea of we are more about like the get in there and shoot versus like the wait and pass and wait and get the opportunity for the shot. We took so many shots that were unnecessary, that just are wasted. And it was like, there's no way that's going in.
I don't think we have the world-class talent to do that ball control stuff.
We need ball control. Yeah.
I think we're attacking.
Yeah.
We created some good chances. So,
we did.
You know.
Yeah,
we have a solid squad.
Germany's a better team, though. So, we'll see.
When do they play again? Do you know?
Thursday morning at 9:00.
Wow. Okay. Definitely going to watch that.
I will have to work. Yeah, I will be on the road, but I'll be able to listen. Hopefully on satellite.
I will give you a play-by-play update text.
I'm trying to devise a plan that I can leave my office for 2 hours, and that, because the wonderful part of international soccer matches is 99.9% of them last just the 2 hours. You don't have to block off 3.5 hours to watch a sporting event like you do American football.
Or baseball.
Literally, it's 2 hours.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to devise a way to leave my office shortly before 9
from the office
and return to my office shortly after 11.
And I like not, it.
Yeah, and not be
fired.
If I was in town and at work, I would absolutely be going down to the bar to watch the game.
Sweet.
Yeah, no, I will be
9 a.m. drinks.
If I can, I will be going to Brother Daniel's house, which is like 5 minutes from my office. So
nice.
If I can work it out.
Okay, what do you have for trivia for us tonight?
What do I have for trivia in honor of in honor of our discussion earlier in terms of series finales? I posed the question to the two of you. In American television, what is the most watched series finale ever?
Oh, Jeez.
In terms of viewers, total viewers.
MASH.
What is the most watched?
MASH. I would say it's either MASH or like I Love Lucy.
I'm going to guess MASH.
Alrighty. You guys are absolutely correct. On February 28th, 1983, MASH signed off with an episode titled Goodbye, Farewell, and Amen. Number of viewers, 105 million.
Holy shit.
That number is just absurd.
100? I mean, think about 19... I've thought about this. Think about in 1983. How many channels were on American television? Yeah. Four? Five?
Yeah.
Maybe one or two cable channels? CNN maybe had gotten started? So... 60% of American households watched the finale of MASH.
That's insane.
Yeah.
There's those numbers will never ever be matched.
Never.
Ever again.
Never.
Now there's 400 channels.
Oh my! Right?
Yeah.
Oh man, that's so awesome. Crazy! Great.
The second
that is a unbelievable finale too.
I never watched MASH.
Yeah,
I
was my two, god!
So good.
Mm.
In terms of shows that we have talked about and we're interested in, I was surprised to see that Star Trek The Next Generation was the 14th most watched series finale. The top, you know, the ones above it are kind of straightforward, you know, well, they're sitcoms and they're dramas. They're the Tonight Show series finale with the last Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
50 million viewers. But everything else is sitcoms and dramas, but Star Trek The Next Generation, which the finale aired May 23rd, 1994, had 31 million viewers.
Wow. That just seems like a lot for that.
It aired in syndication. All the other series finales were on the, you know, one of the big three networks, ABC, CBS, or NBC. Star Trek The Next Generation was a syndicated TV show, and it had 31 million viewers for its finale.
Wow. That's 31 million nerds.
Pretty much.
Geeks.
Nerds.
All of you geeks and nerds out there. Okay, if you'd like to email Andrew about a trivia question, you can email him at kinginthenorth52@gmail.com. You should follow us on Twitter, please, at @brothers_geek. At twitter.com. And visit us at thebrothersgeek.com for all of your podcasting needs.
Show notes.
Yes, sir.
Show notes.
Show notes, et cetera.
Et cetera.
A little plug for next week's episode.
We will be doing a podcast right in front of each other. We'll be standing in front of each other. It'll be awesome.
In Portland, Oregon.
We will be drinking Portland, Oregon beers. And doing a podcast together. It'll be fantastic.
Yep. It'll be exciting.
With some whiskey.
Nice. All right. Thank you for listening, and have a wonderful evening.
See you
Good
soon,
night, everyone.
Patrick.
See you all soon.
Bye.
See you soon.